thanks for checking out another edition of the Pucktown Podcast. Jared Schaffrin with you here as always. Another excellent episode. Really cool to talk with Patrick Weller. Got a little bit of history from his career and some stories. Obviously a former Stingray, former Hershey Bear, and someone who's been around this organization for a long time. So it was excellent to catch up with him and hear, you know, some of a little bit of his time as a player, but also now as a coach getting ready for the Hershey Bears in their season, which is going to begin right around February 5th. Don't have the full schedule for the Bears yet, but I know they're working hard on that and hopefully having some more details soon on when their games are going to be. The Washington Capitals, NHL affiliate of the Stingrays, will be kicking off their regular season this week, starting on Thursday against the Buffalo Sabres. Want to wish the Caps and everybody with the organization good luck on a new season. A lot of new faces this year, new head coach for Washington, and we're definitely going to be following all of the organization's news, and hopefully they have a great start to the year. So looking forward to seeing the NHL start up this week as well. The Stingrays got two wins last week over the Wheeling Nailers, winning both games in come-from-behind fashion. They won on Friday after a 2-0 deficit in the second period, scoring four straight goals from four different players. Zach Malatesta was named first star in his first home game with the Rays, scoring the game-winning goal as well as an assist. And Malatesta, in that game, finished with a +4 rating. He was on the ice for all four Stingrays goals, including the empty netter, which was Mason Morelli with his third goal of the season. The following night, South Carolina also a come-from-behind win. This time they were down 2-1 in the first period, evened it out with another goal by Mason Morelli at the end of the first, but it was Caleb Herbert who had the big night. Herbert with 4 points, a goal and three assists, the first four-point game of his career. I got a chance to talk to him about it earlier, and he was just as surprised. I was surprised when I went back and looked to see that it was his first four-point game in his career, and he said, yeah, you know, I've had 3 points a couple times, but it was a new high for him. So that was really cool to see. His last assist came on Dylan Stamen's second goal of the night. Stamen had goals in the third period, both in the first 2 minutes and then in the last 2 minutes. And, you know, when you score in the first 2 minutes and the last 2 minutes of a period, most likely you're probably going to end up having a good outcome. The big thing from Saturday for South Carolina, and really the only negative for the Rays this season so far, is that their special teams hasn't been up to what we expect. And the good thing is the Rays have a great record, and they're in first place, and we'll talk about that in a second. So it hasn't really hurt them too much, but they broke out on the power play on Saturday. Three power play goals for South Carolina, and the third one was an empty netter, but, you know, that's when Wheeling had the extra attacker on, obviously, so for South Carolina to score three times on the power play really, you know, gives everybody some confidence on that power play unit because we know the talent is there. And it was kind of just a matter of time for these guys that they could get clicking. Also want to give a shout out to Darian Craighead, who scored his first pro goal 56 seconds into that game on Saturday as well. And goaltender Alex Dubow, who has won all three of the last Stingrays games on the team's winning streak. Dubow with 28 saves on Saturday in the victory, and he has really been a huge piece of this team so far this year. Hunter Shepard down with an injury right now. The Stingrays have brought in Jake Kupski, and we expect him to get some time as well at some point, but right now Alex Dubow, Coach Ryan Blair, riding the hot hand. He's started the last two games, won both of them. Previous to that, he won in Jacksonville as well, replacing Shepard. So excellent start for Dubow, and the Stingrays, as we mentioned, 6-1-2 record. They are in first place in the ECHL South Division. And just to clarify, you know, I know you had our weekly report and said the Stingrays are in first place, and they are, but they don't have the most points in the ECHL. The Stingrays are in first place based on their winning percentage, which is .778. And they have 14 points. Florida has 16 points right now coming into the weekend. Florida's winning percentage, .727. So the winning percentage is the statistic that is determining the standings this year because the ECHL, You know, some teams in the league are not playing the same number of games as others. Fort Wayne is the team that started a little bit later, so the league decided it was more fair to do winning percentage for this specific season. I believe that for next year it will go back to point totals, so you'll still see the point totals in the standings. And yes, they still mean something when you get an overtime loss point or a shootout loss point, because that will help your winning percentage or your points percentage. But the Stingrays are in first place right now. It feels good. They've won three games in a row. And this week, they've got games against the Greenville Swamp Rabbits on Friday and Saturday, and then a game against the Jacksonville Icemen on Monday afternoon. So South Carolina with another busy week, all three games at home, and another chance to continue their hot play to start the season. This week's guest, Patrick Weller, was originally drafted by the Washington Capitals in the third round in 2002. Initially a native of Saskatchewan, played his junior hockey in the Western Hockey League for the Portland Winterhawks and Calgary Hitmen, but then turned pro and unfortunately never made it all the way up to the NHL, but had plenty of AHL experience, including a three-year stint with where he was only with the Hershey Bears, 2010 through 2013. He was had some great time with the Hershey Bears. Was also with the Bears before that, but he was splitting time between Hershey and South Carolina, and he was a part of the 2009 South Carolina Stingrays Kelly Cup Championship team. Also was a part of a Kelly Cup Championship with the Reading Royals during the 2012-2013 season. And, you know, the Hershey Bears won it as well during 2010, and Patrick Weller was a part of that team as well, although he was in South Carolina for a little bit of that 09-10 year as well. So a guy really who knows this organization extremely well and got the chance to come back to Charleston last week, was able to do some coaching and get ready for the Hershey Bears season, was able to take an extra look at some of the Bears players that are down in South Carolina right now before the AHL begins. And we caught up with him a whole bunch of different topics, talking about his playing career, his philosophy as a coach, you know, what it's like coaching in Hershey and being a part of that organization, being affiliated with the Caps and their system and their staff. And it was a great conversation with him, just going through some of these things and getting to hear his take. And, you know, I think for a lot of Rays fans, a guy who people might remember here as a player, but now as a coach, you know, he's in the AHL and he's right there with Spencer Carberry through everything with the Bears. So we really appreciate Patrick giving us some time while he was down with the Stingrays in North Charleston. And it was a great conversation. So here it is. Joining us this week on the Pucktown Podcast, assistant coach for the Hershey Bears, Patrick Weller, who is down in Charleston this week working with the Stingrays, a former Stingray himself and someone who's now in the coaching ranks. And, you know, start off by giving us a little bit of some insight about what you're doing this week and how you guys are preparing for the season as Hershey. And I know you said the opportunity kind of just came about, and Spencer Carberry obviously wanted to get as much help as possible toward the organization here.
Yeah, this opportunity kind of came about with after the start of training camp with Spencer being here from day one, with us not playing and with South Carolina agreeing to their return to play plan. We thought it was a really good opportunity for not only Spencer but myself to get some eyes on some players. And obviously with our experiences here as former pros and players and having the opportunity to play for the Stingrays, we have so much invested here with in terms of how great we feel about the organization, how much care we have for, you know, our affiliate. And we appreciate you know, all the time that we get to spend here. And not only that, these are players that we want to make sure we have a really good feel for, because we're always looking to improve our roster. But that being said, this week's all about just trying to echo the message that have been sent by head coach Ryan Blair and Brennan Kotick, just trying to give them maybe a second voice. And it's been great, just working specifically with the 10 defensemen that they have here. It's been a great week, and really thankful to have the opportunity. It's been basically since March where I haven't had much going on. So to get this opportunity, as the closer I got to Charleston on my drive down, I started getting super excited for so many reasons, and the memories kept flowing back.
Yeah, you mentioned the memories. Want to touch on a few things there, but I guess the first thing, what was it like walking back in this building? When was the last time that you were in Charleston in this building?
The last time I was the assistant coach for the Reading Royals, been 3 years ago now. So we actually played a two-game stand here. Didn't go very well, as South Carolina usually does pretty well. So, but no, just coming back in the North Charleston Coliseum, obviously, it's very special to me because we – in 2009, it was such a special group, and to have success, anytime you, the seasons that you remember, I played professionally for 13 seasons, and the ones that you really remember were the ones that you're able to win and have success with, and such a special group, and I know there's a big group that still live down here, and like I said, it's I don't want to get too emotional, but it means a lot.
We'll get into that a little bit more, but wanted to touch base on, you said you haven't been doing a whole lot. What has this quarantine been like for you? You guys are in a battle for, you know, first place in your division. You guys were having a really good season, and everything just stops to a halt. Obviously, nothing anyone's ever experienced before, and then just a whole lot of waiting. I'm sure that was frustrating. What was that quarantine period like for you?
Yeah, it was tough. It happened really quickly, as everyone knows, and you know, everything kind of got shut down abruptly. So that was tough. We were really liking our, you know, our chances with our team. Our group was really gelling there, and we were preparing for a game at home on a Friday, and we held practice Thursday, and then everything got shut down. So it was really tough. Felt bad for our players. You know, obviously we want to stay busy as a staff and prove our worth and continue to grow and develop as coaches. But you know, you feel hard. Feel really bad for the guys that lay it on the line every night. So for our players, that's where our thoughts were right away, because obviously we get shut down, and they lose the opportunity to showcase themselves. So that was tough. And then obviously when the quarantine happened, there wasn't much going on in the hockey world, or that for much for anyone else for that matter. So we tried to stay as busy as we could with you know, there's a lot of coaches symposiums and Zoom calls that you can get involved with. I tried to stay sharp with just talking to different coaches and bouncing ideas off, and trying to stay as sharp as you can in for whatever little things you can do. Quarantine was tough, but I guess the silver lining for me was, family-wise, I started a family during the quarantine, which is unique in its own way. But to have the extra time with my now you know, almost 6-month-year-old son, that's been very special.
Well, congratulations on that. Happy to hear that your son and family are doing well. And you know, when you think about the quarantine, it's now still going. It's still something that it's affecting everybody every day. But the good news for you guys is this week, AHL announced Hershey Bears are going to return to play. I know they're working really hard on a schedule. I know you guys are going to be back on the ice very shortly for camp. And February 5th, not that long away. So all of a sudden, here you go. You're starting back up, and now things are happening.
No, I think as quickly as things shut down last season, they're starting back up now. So it's extremely exciting for our players, obviously for us as a staff, to have purpose again and to get back in the rink and do what we love. This is a tremendous opportunity, and it's going to be a unique year. We're not sure what the season's going to look like. We know it's extremely shortened. We know it's going to be a little touch and go, and things develop and change, you know, every 24, 48 hours. So we're still figuring out the details and all that good stuff, but it's a tremendous opportunity for our guys to develop again, get back on the ice and play some meaningful hockey. And that being said, it's a great opportunity for the players here in South Carolina, with you know, shorter, smaller rosters up top, not sure how things are going to look. You know, it's a great leg up and advantage that some of these players have, that they've been going for, you know, almost a month now. So it's going to be a great opportunity, and that's why it's so important, I think, for us as coaches to have eyes on the players down here. You know, we want to make sure that we're, you know, leaving no stone unturned in terms of, you know, hopefully finding and developing talent.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned the opportunities that are available with the NHL having a taxi squad roster that maybe takes away some guys that might have been with you guys in Hershey, and that creates potentially some openings. And you said it, you've been here this week. You're taking a look at the guys on the Stingrays roster. What have you seen, and what have you been able to do with those guys? I know you've been out on the ice early doing some extra work. What has that been like working with those guys?
Well, I think the biggest thing I'll say is I've been super impressed with both coaches. I think they've ran just a really great a great practice plan all week. But this group in general, it's a tremendous leadership group. And one thing that it's been a hard week. You know, they practiced Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, no time off. And the practice has been tough. So, you know, they're preparing for two hard games this weekend. But the energy has never dropped off. The attitudes have been great. They've been this team works. So it's I'm extremely impressed with the group as a whole. From the defensive side of it, you know, dealing with the 10 of them, I know it's tough for the guys that haven't been in the lineup because it's a smaller season for the ECHL, and there's some players that haven't played. But I've been impressed with every single one of these defensemen. I think that there's a big future here for all of them. You know, it's always tough because you know for them to find homes at the next level. But at the same time, this is a good group. You know, obviously there's three contracted defensemen that we have here. So I've been spending a little bit of time with them just from an organizational standpoint. But I've been super impressed with all of them, and they've been a treat to work with.
The first thing you said there, the coaching staff, these guys are in new positions. Ryan Blair was here last year, but he was an assistant, so now he's taking over and running things. And Brendan Kotick is a guy who just got here, just new into the coaching world. But, yeah, like you said, it's probably been pretty cool for them to jump right into this and have to do everything. And I think they have such a positive energy around them every day here at the rink.
Yeah, one thing that I will say is I've been super impressed with how Ryan Blair carries himself, how he presents. He seems extremely polished for someone who's a first-year head coach, and that's something that usually takes a little bit of time, but he's way ahead of that curve from my experiences. So I've, you know, kudos to him for that because he's done he's worked really hard. I know I was in touch with him in the summer just to try to bounce ideas as well about certain things, but he's extremely detailed, he's extremely caring of his players, and obviously that jumps off right away. And Brendan Kotick does a really good job, and he's new to the position as well as an assistant coach, but I view it as an opportunity. I think there's learning you could do from my standpoint, but I've learned things from him as well. I think that he's a young coach who's extremely ambitious, who's extremely detailed. And one thing that I'm taking drills from him that even as a first-year coach who's running defenseman, he's got some really good ideas. So it was just another opportunity where it's a young coach who's going to do some really good things.
You mentioned him transitioning as a new coach. You said you played 13 years pro. When you look back at that, do you see, you know, you remember some of what it was like for you? And, you know, what were some of the reasons that you wanted to get into coaching? Why did that jump out to you as something you wanted to do when your career was over?
I think the biggest, it wasn't always a goal of mine as a player. It kind of just slowly developed. But I think I was a part of the second lockout, and I was 30 years old at the time, so I was kind of winding down in my career in terms of you know, getting a toehold on the American League. And I actually ended up getting sent down to Reading at that time. Washington was affiliated with Reading mm-hmm. at the time. And I ended up getting sent down, and I was really disappointed, as most people should be, and all that good stuff. But I remember having a conversation with my dad. He's like, you can go down with a bad attitude, you can go down with a great attitude and help young players out and, you know, maybe push the process forward. So that was the first year where I maybe felt like I – you know, had a little bit of influence with some younger players, and we ended up having a really good team down there in Reading, and we were able to win the Kelly Cup there that year. So I look back on that year as kind of maybe opening my eyes to the other side of the game, and ever since then I've kind of had my mind on it, and just been really fortunate with some opportunities to be put in situations to be a coach. And I think the biggest thing is I want to make sure that I am helping out young players. I think that I've been blessed to have a lot of really good coaches throughout my career, and been picking up on a lot of things and being a sponge that way. So to pay it forward, hopefully, and hopefully that helps some of these players along the road.
You played in Hershey's and you played in South Carolina, so the organizations that you're with, you're not a stranger to whatsoever. What was it like from a Hershey side of things, you know, getting there as a coach, and, you know, you're not a player anymore? Obviously, you'd been a coach for a while at that point, so it wasn't a new transition in that sense, but coaching it for a team that you played for is probably something that's pretty special. Not a lot of people get to do that.
It extremely is, and that's, I know how fortunate I am to have this opportunity. My wife is from Hershey, so it's extremely special for us. We can't thank you know, the Washington Capitals organization for taking us on. It's been an amazing journey for 2 years, and you know, I'm so thankful to Spencer Carberry for being a great teacher, but to be on the other side of it in Hershey, from a player to now to a coach, not a lot has changed, but at the same time, it's Hershey's a special place for me. You know, it's basically my hometown now. I'm from Saskatchewan, Canada originally, but ever since I've stopped playing, that's been my home base in the summers. So No one ever gets to play in their hometown more often than not when they turn pro. But it's now to coach in your hometown, essentially, these things just don't happen. So I'm extremely grateful. And, you know, with that comes a lot of work because I want to make sure it, you prove your worth and prove the hire.
Well, Spencer Carberry is a guy you work with every day, and he's a guy that everybody down here knows extremely well, yeah. Obviously as a player, and then as a coach here, you know, winningest coach in Stingrays yeah. history. What's your relationship been like with him now, getting to know him as a coach and working with him on a daily basis? Because people love him. He's got so much yeah. energy, and he's so passionate.
Yeah, he's and that's just it. Like the passion just jumps springs off the board right away. Spencer and I, we were stallmates when we won it in 2009, so we knew each other as teammates. Obviously, had a lot of respect for each other in how we played, and I loved his compete and as a player, and now his passion as a coach. There's not a more prepared, more hardworking coach in my opinion. I think that our teams are extremely detailed. The care and the time that he has for every one of his players, it's something that's really inspiring to me because I'm still a young coach and I'm developing as well. But he's been a great teacher. The way he commands the room, the way he talks to his group, the patience he has with young players to help them develop, especially at the American League level, it's been something that I feel myself very fortunate to be around every day.
Well, you mentioned back being a stallmate with him in that year. And, again, it wasn't like you were here for a ton of the regular season that year. What do you remember, you know, joining the team and being a part of that roster in the postseason but having not really been for that many games during the regular season that year?
Yeah, so I think I finished that year with, I think there was 10 games left in the regular season. And as most teams are at that point, you know, your roster isn't the same. We had a lot of guys in the American League, you know, the Johan Krolls, our captain, Brad Farnick was up. So there was a lot of players that weren't there. So it was a bit of a trickle-down effect once playoffs actually did start. And as a result, we got off to a really tough start and almost lost to Charlotte. We were down 0-2 and had to make a comeback in the first series. But it's a very, very special group. And you know, friends, lifelong friends to this day from that group. Obviously, to have the – I talked about a little bit earlier about, you know, having good coaches. Well, we had Jared Bednar there. So we all know how well he's doing with Colorado, and it's no secret to why, just how he treated our group, how he got us to play hard, the detail that he had with and structure that we played with. It was pretty special because, obviously, you know, we played so hard that time. We had to beat some really good teams to get there. You know, Florida springs to mind, and then obviously beating a really good Alaska team in what is going to be obviously the most longest traveled pro championship in North America. But really special memories that I hold dear to my heart.
Luckily, on this podcast, even our listeners, you know, within the last year have heard on the podcast from a few different members of that team. And one of the stories that sticks out to me and, you know, curious to see what you remember about it, too, is actually from Darren Abbott about when you guys had to plan the travel back to Alaska for the final game. You know, the state of mind that everyone was in after a tough loss and having Jared to be there to kind of keep everybody calm and keep everyone focused. But I guess Darren he said he remembers being in the office and looking up flights and trying to see how everyone was going to get back to Alaska. And all the while, it's a game seven of all things. So what do you remember about those couple crazy days there?
It was first off extremely devastating because we were at home and they had basically done a really good job and promoted the game. So it was the largest crowd I'd ever seen. And we had a lot of friends and family in town from our players. There was a lot of expectation there that we were going to win it at home ice. Game went into overtime and we lost a heartbreaker. So right away, not only are you extremely disappointed that you don't get that opportunity to raise the cup at home, but the daunting thing is staring down the travel again to Alaska. So it hit really hard. And that's one thing that the ownership and our coaching group did a really good job of. You know, that could have went south in a hurry because of going up to Alaska, which was always a tough place to play, but also just getting up there is challenging in its own right. So we had tough travel. But we found our way to get up there. The group stayed extremely calm. We should have won game six. Things fell apart quickly and they were able to beat us. But game seven, we played as close to a flawless game as you can. And Once again, just would have loved to have won at home with for these special fans and for this place and for our friends and family to be a part of it. But to win it on the road together made it a little bit more special because it's a little tighter, and especially in such a hostile building like up in Alaska. That was a nice feeling.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, as a group, you're kind of you're up there, a kind of us against the world mentality
for
a little
sure.
bit, and then to win it and then bring it back home and then get to share it with everybody. But, you know, being up there, going into that game, kind of feeling like we are this tight-knit group and we're going to do this as a group must have been cool.
Yeah, and I think to this day I still remember we gave up our ice for the morning skate for before game seven, just to mentally just kind of say, hey, listen, like at this point, guys, like you're ready to go. You know what you got to do. And our team went for a walk to a park in the middle of downtown Alaska. And I'll remember this to this day when it was actually Cale McLean. And obviously that's our assistant coach who's now a head coach in the American League in Stockton. We all know Cale extremely well. But it was actually Cale who came up with kind of a really good pump-up speech and just talked about the Apollo 13. Everyone knows the story there about how they call it the successful failure. But he just kind of said, listen, it's kind of the same feeling. Wherever right now we're devastated. We lost game five at home. We lose game six in a heartbreaker. And everyone kind of feels like the walls are falling down or the walls are falling in on you. But and it was Ed Harris's character in Apollo 13 that says, with all due respect, I think it's going to be our finest hour. So I'll always remember that from Cale, because I just thought that gravitates to still to this day. And you don't remember everything that coaches say to you along the way. But obviously that was something that that I always remember. And I think it was just kind of a rallying point.
What did that do for your career to have that happen? And you still, it wasn't like that was an ending for your career. You know, you had a lot of years pro after that. What was it like to have that experience and continue to build off of that for when you came back to the rink the next couple of years?
I think it was really big for me. It was my fifth year pro, pardon me. So I was still trying to climb the ladder. I'd played games in the American League, but I'd never really grabbed a stranglehold on a roster position. And I think obviously the next year I didn't make Hershey at a camp. I came back for another month to start the next season. But after I got called up and recalled, I never left for the greater parts of five seasons. So I think it did a lot for my career, being coached right, being understanding. But anytime you win, teams want winners, and especially when you you play in big games, it helps you out. It helps you become more consistent. And when you win something, you crave that feeling, and it's all that matters. So I think it was, you know, instrumental in making me get better as a pro, the approach, the whole thing. But just having the opportunity to have great coaches down here. And then to win it with that special group was, I'll always consider myself extremely fortunate for that trade happened to get my rights to South Carolina.
Sure. How, fast forwarding to, you know, now as a coach, you know, let's get a little in a little bit of, you know, your philosophy as a coach. You know, what do you try to bring to the rink every day when you look at how you are as a coach and the relationships you have with your players, whether it's guys who are Hershey Bears contracts or Washington Capitals, or maybe a guy who's coming in on a tryout that you might meet for the first time in training camp in a couple of weeks. What's something you pride yourself on? What do you try to bring to the rink every day?
Well, I think the biggest thing and why I wanted to get into coaching is I think I had an ability to relate to every player in the room. And I think you can always find common ground with everybody, whether it's your best player or all the way down to someone who might be fringe in and out of the lineup. I think the biggest thing is to make sure you have time for everyone. You want to improve everyone. You want to make sure that they're wanting more. They're wanting to develop themselves. But the biggest thing is I want these players to know that we care about them and make sure that there's a plan put in place. Yes, some guys go through a harder time where they're in and out of the lineup. Maybe they don't get the situations that they want, but they are playing every night. So negativity can spread that way. But I think the biggest thing is just finding that common ground, understanding that, listen, like this is we're building here. Every player is different. Every player's going through their own challenges. But that's why it's so important to make sure that you have time for them and make sure that there's a plan put in place. I think that's that one of the reasons why I got into coaching was the lack of communication that I had from kind of some coaches growing up. I wanted to get rid of that stigma where, you know, I want to be as brutally honest and to make sure the players have somewhat of an idea where they stand, you know, basically every single night.
When you look back at your career and, you know, and you said it, you know, you want to relate to everybody. How did that, you know, as how did that come about as a player? You know, how did you get that mindset? And it sounds like that's someone who you were in the locker room too, trying to relate to maybe different guys and helping out different, whether they're a newer guy or a guy who just came in from a trade. You know, how did that kind of come about as a player?
Well, I think it was basically in my role. I was one of those guys. I think I understood that I was never going to be the best player on our team. I understood my role. I knew what my expectations were. But that being said, I was an energy guy. I wanted to make sure that the guys were having fun, that we were a close-knit group away from the rink. And, you know, I prided myself on being kind of a bit of a glue guy. I know we use that term a little bit in terms of how we describe certain people. But so now as a coach, I kind of take it as kind of being the same responsibility. I want to make sure that this is a fun environment, that guys are, you know, that we want to get better. We want to make sure every player has their own agenda. But at the same time, it's nothing's greater than the team. And we're going to build an individual plan together, but we're going to have a lot of fun while we're doing it. We're going to work extremely hard. But at the end of the day, players will know that we care about them. And, you know, it's not every player is going to have the easiest time with how things happen because you know, we can't give everyone 25 minutes every night. But at the same time, we want to make sure that they know deep down. No one will ever say that we don't care about these guys, because we definitely do.
The ECHL this season, and I'm sure the American League is going to be the same thing when it starts up. This is so different this year. I mean, everything has changed. Even the lineup. You know, we're allowed to dress more skaters in this league than we have been in a long time. So everything's been different. But one thing I think that everybody's taken away from this, and it obviously stems from the fact that less teams are playing, is that the talent level at the league is probably better than you could arguably say that it's been in a long, long time. What's it been like, you know, kind of seeing this roster on a day-to-day basis and knowing that, you know, this is kind of almost like an ECHL plus because there's less spots available and guys are working that much harder to stay on these rosters?
Yeah, well, before I came down, that was the first thing that Spencer Carvey told me. He's like, this is the best I've seen the ECHL in a long time, and for obvious reasons, as you just pointed out. So what an opportunity for these players, and it's, I even told you know, some of the younger guys who aren't playing as much as they would have liked, I said, this is a really good opportunity. Every day in practice is a really good challenge, because there's just players flat out that shouldn't be here right now. And, you know, what an opportunity for these young guys to test themselves, and what a measuring stick for certain players to want to get to. So it's a great opportunity. And obviously, just even for all these players that have the opportunity to play right now, it's such a leg up, you know, when we start, whenever that may be. I'm hearing, you know, early on the 20th or around that date. So things are going to happen quick. And when it does, you know, playing right now is going to be worth its weight in gold.
What is the communication like from you guys to your players right now that you're expected to have when camp opens up? How much are you guys trying to stay in contact? Is there any meetings that you guys have scheduled, you know, virtually before guys get into town? How's the communication been like for you guys?
It's been good. It's been tough right now because Spencer, our head coach, is in Washington right mm-hmm. now, and he's getting introduced to a new coaching staff up there, mm-hmm. And they're pulling long days because of COVID protocol, and so we haven't done a lot. We're expecting our first kind of – we've been doing a lot of Zoom meetings throughout the course of the pandemic, but – we have a meeting set up for Friday. We're going to go over a plan, our initial plan. But basically, we've had so much time during the pandemic to essentially get ready for whenever this comes. So we're never going to be scrambling. But in terms of the communication of what we're hearing, how things are going to go, things happen so quickly and change so quickly. And I know the American League is working as hard as they can to get a schedule, to make sure protocols are in place like they are down here so that everyone is safe. And I think that's the biggest thing. So we'll be ready when the time comes. But until then, it's, you know, we're expecting the schedule to come out. And then from there, we'll just kind of formulate from there.
I feel like I had to ask you this as maybe my last question here before we let you go. But, you know, you look at the roster that you guys have for this season, and for most hockey fans, and this was the same way last year, you know, having a guy like Matt Molson on your roster must be really just an extremely beneficial for you guys to have someone who's done everything at every level, and to have him back now for another year with that group that you guys have. What's it like having him in the room and having him there as from a coaching perspective to have a guy like that on a daily basis?
Well, he's a special player and a special guy, and obviously everyone knows he's been in the NHL for – dozen years and has done so well, you know, for himself there. And now that his career is winding down, we couldn't have asked for a better leader in terms of, you know, just his professionalism, the time he spends on his craft. He's a unique player. He's got a net front presence, scoring touch. He's not the prettiest skater, but at the same time, he can find ways to get things done. So he's been really good for our young guys to see. He's really good with them. He takes a lot of individual time, and you know, and he's essentially a second voice. He's kind of, you know, he's our second voice from Spencer down to, you know, when we leave the room, it's nice knowing you have the Matt Molsons of the world that are kind of echoing what you're saying and holding guys accountable as well, because at the end of the day, you need your leadership group to, you know, to have your have support. And so we're very thankful for Matt, and obviously the work that he did last year was exceptional. And we know that, you know, he's going to, not only that, he's just going to continue doing what he does because he's just that type of person.
Well, Coach, we appreciate you giving us this time. This has been really cool, both to have you on this podcast, but also just to have you in the rink every day, getting the opportunity to work with our players. And I'm sure for you, it's been nice to get back on the ice, but we really appreciate all the time that you gave. And we look forward to watching you guys this season in Hershey and wishing the best for you guys.
Oh, thank you. It's been my pleasure. And I just have to say, it's been such a great opportunity to be back here. I absolutely love Charleston for so many reasons. There's so many good people here. This is an amazing organization that, it means a lot to me. It means a lot to Spencer Carberry and myself, and for anyone that's ever played here, knows what I mean. The people here make it so special, but this organization is amazing, and to have this opportunity is I'm extremely thankful for it.
Well, thanks again for taking the time, and again, we wish you the best of luck this year.
Thank you very much.
My thanks again to Patrick Weller for his time. We wish the Hershey Bears best of luck with their season starting up in just a few weeks. Wrapping up here on the Pucktown podcast for this week, this week's promotions, Wizard Night on Friday. You know, I'm a big Harry Potter fan, so I always enjoy when we get to put on Wizard Night, and we're going to have the teams again this year. A little bit different with the House Cup teams, if you're a fan of what we do the last couple of years. We've divided up the teams, but we've actually renamed the houses, after four famous Stingrays. So we've got four different teams, four different houses, and the house is now named after Jared Bednar, Brett Marietti, Jason Fitzsimmons, and Rob Concannon. So a little bit of a twist on the House Cup this year, but we've got that coming up on Friday. Saturday is Youth Sports Night. We're recognizing and having a lot of different youth sports groups from around the Lowcountry at the game. It's also a free parking night as well on the 16th. And then on Monday, Kids Takeover Day. We've had that one a bunch over the last couple years as well. Really cool during the day, 1:05 p.m. start to have some kids help out with the game when possible. Obviously, this year a little bit different. We've had some more things in the past that we weren't able to do this year, but we are going to still have kids be a major part of that game on Monday at 1 o'clock. And then looking ahead, the Stingrays also playing at home on February 3rd, after the road trip, the Rays going up to Wheeling and then down to Florida over the next couple weeks after this homestand ends. But February 3rd, home against Greenville. February 5th, home against Jacksonville. February 10th, home against Florida. And then after that, we should have some more dates being announced shortly. The ECHL working hard on trying to finish out that 2020-21 schedule. And we heard from Ryan Creeland last week. So go back and check that one out if you haven't listened to our episode with Ryan Creeland. A little bit more insight onto what things have been like at the league and how they've tried to keep things going here in the ECHL despite COVID-19 and all the safety protocols that the league has put into place. So we are really excited about seeing more of that schedule coming through. And I know there's a lot of people with tickets who want to know when these games are. Trust me, we want to know as well. My schedule's wide open because I don't know when the Stingrays are going to have games. So we're hopefully going to find out as soon as possible, get those on the calendar, get them on the schedule, and they'll be here sooner than later. So really excited about this team, how they've started the year, and looking forward to this weekend's games. Thanks again for everyone who has listened. Check out some of our previous episodes, and we'll talk to you again soon.